Hello and welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Be sure to follow OTG on Twitter and be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, my good friend, Harris Wishard. What's up, Harris?
What's up, Nick? Been a little bit excited to get back on with you on the weekends and discuss some of this action we've been witnessing the NBA.
Yeah, a lot of games this week, a lot of action, a lot of controversy. You know, some teams took some big losses. But we'll start with the Warriors' loss to the Rockets this past week and Draymond Green getting some more attention for one of his high leg kicks. What do you think about Draymond? What do you think about his antics? Are these kicks dangerous or is this part of basketball? What do you think?
Well, Draymond's always kind of been a wild card, and it's almost like, you know, a bull in a china shop, whatever analogy you want to use. He's a little out of control, and, you know, a lot of people have referenced him to being the heart and soul of that team. And he's a throwback player. He's an old school player. There's old school. There's gritty. There's hard, you know, working on both ends of the floor. There's, you know, hard nosed defense. And then there's cheap shots. And Draymond Green really knows how to work the fine line between what's a dirty play and what's a hard nosed play. And I think the other night, another example of him, you know, flirting with danger there. And they had that graphic up. Of, you know, what would he get hard in the face, right?
Yeah, he got hard in the face. He got LeBron. This is all this year. He got LeBron in the crotch in the finals. Andre Robinson right. in the face. Steven Adams right. in the crotch twice. So right. he's got a history.
Yeah, he had the issue with the picture over. And summer. And so, yeah, Draymond is one of those guys, I think, that you love him when he's on your team and you really dislike him when he's not on your team. He almost has that, like, Rodman-esque attitude to him. Maybe not as crazy as Dennis was, but I don't know. I mean, I think he does enough for them. I think you tolerate it more and the impact. You know what I mean by that? The impact of the player as far as behavioral issues. And you mentioned, I think, of our last podcast about J.R. Smith and what JR could get away with because of his talent, but Draymond means a lot more to the Warriors than JR does to Cleveland. So Draymond obviously got to clean his act up a little bit, but I think the league gets frustrated by it. They've had some decisions to make, and the game five, obviously probably one of the biggest final decisions the league has ever had to make in suspending a quality, very high quality player for a very important, crucial closeout game last year. So, you know, Draymond, you know, it's probably got to take it down a notch or two, but I'm sure he won't trade in his style of play and what has gotten him to that level, the chip on his shoulder, the second round draft pick. So I don't think we're going to see anything different from him. Is he a guy that people enjoy playing against? Probably not, because they know they could be at some risk for some unnecessary treatment.
Yeah, I mean, that's some good points you made there, Harris. Do you think this is something that could impact the Warriors again this postseason? You know, if he has the, you know, he's building up this reputation, obviously. If he does these high kicks, he's going to get the flagrants. And if they add up, he's going to get another suspension. Do you think this is something the Warriors need to address with him? Or just kind of
– The only thing I'm concerned about would be the technical foul count. I don't know what his technical foul count is at right now, but – I would think that if that became an issue, that's something that they would take a closer look at in the league, as far as, you know, obviously you get a certain amount of techs in the playoffs that carries over. But, you know, Rasheed Wallace used to run into some of those problems and some other bad boys of the league. So I think Draymond obviously now has that reputation. It's something, I don't know if you want a reputation for. He came up as the heart and soul of the team. And obviously we know his playmaking ability at the top of the key and how he can spread the floor for them. And everything he does on both ends for this ball club, and seems to be more of a vocal leader than Steph and Kevin Durant. So he obviously brings a lot more positive to the table than negative. If this continues to be an ongoing issue, it will be addressed.
Yeah, I could definitely see Steve Kerr addressing it. You know that, and you know, like you said, he has the energy. It is part of his game, so you have to leave some of it, but it can become an issue. Talking about another big time team, you know, the Warriors did lose to the Rockets in that game as well. The Cavs lost again last night to the Bulls. That's three straight losses for the Cavs. They lost to the Bucks, Clippers, and Bulls. Are you worried about this team, or is it really doesn't matter? They can lose three straight early in the season, and it's not going to change your opinion.
I don't know how you feel about this, and you could, you know, talk a little bit on the Cavs after this, but the Cavaliers are a team that, and you saw it, with the Nets a couple of years ago. They went like 0-4 to the Nets in the regular season. I never really put too much emphasis on what LeBron did in the regular season. I thought early in the year, man, they're on a mission. It's almost like they get out in front. You have like a big lead in against your cousin or like a little cousin in the backyard. You let him get a couple points. You know you're always in control. LeBron is always in control. And it really feels that way. You have a couple lap lead. I've made the Mario Kart reference before, my favorite video game from my childhood. You have a little bit of a lead. You could coast. There's some coasting going on, and it's happened in his career before. And, you know, he's made it a point to that, you know, he doesn't want to play 82 games. He won't. And, you know, I'm not saying he can't play 82 games, but I just think there's never – I don't know if I would ever really be scared or concerned, because they've shown they could even be a second seed and make the finals. Wade and the Bulls looked good last night, but they're, to me, there's no real threat to them until I see it in the postseason. So, no, I would definitely not be concerned.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you on this. I mean, LeBron can really turn it on. Obviously, the other guys can't turn it on as easily as LeBron can. But the last two seasons, they weren't, you know, super great to start the year. They have improvements they need to make along as the year progresses. So I think this team will be fine come postseason time. And like you said, they could even deal with a second seed. I think they obviously want the first seed. They want the home court. But I think they're going to be fine. They just need to get some things together. What do you think about the Bulls? You know, the Bulls did get the victory over them. Do you think the Bulls are the biggest threat to them in the East, or is that still the Raptors?
I can't see the Raptors being doing enough up front and being physical enough. I know they have Valanciunas. I didn't see much of the game Friday night. I knew that Rondo was exceptional, and shout out to Rajon Rondo, who helped my fantasy team yesterday. Another win. I had a few wins last week, Nick, so I'm excited about that. And so shout out to Rondo and what Bill Simmons refers to as national TV Rondo, where he seems to play like a different animal when they're big games, and when they're playing the Pistons on a Monday night, he won't show up. But I think the Bulls, if they put it all together, might have more talent up and down their roster than Toronto. I think you can make that argument, but I don't know. I really don't know who's the bigger threat to Cleveland. The Eastern Conference is a little frustrating to talk about just because you just expect Cleveland to be there and everybody else is just jockeying for position and exciting their fans for the playoff chase that is going to eventually end with LeBron. So, yeah, it's a frustrating thing to understand the East right now, and those teams will jockey for position, but it's obviously still LeBron's East to lose. So between those two, between the Bulls and the Raptors, – I would think Toronto is still a bigger threat. They beat them twice in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, but it's still a little early to tell, and teams are starting to – but those top five teams are starting to establish themselves.
Yeah, I think the one thing about the Bulls that helps them is D-Wade gives them that kind of X factor, that experience. He had some nice plays against LeBron last night. You know, he has a little extra emotion. He wants to prove kind of he can do it a little bit on his own too. Obviously, it's still Butler's team, but the Bulls are a tough team. They have some nice physical players in the front court too. Taj Gibson, Robin Lopez do not mind banging around. Yeah. So I think they, like you said, they might have more talent up and down than the Raptors. The Raptors obviously have Lowry and DeRozan, who are two big-time players, in Valanciunas. So it'll be interesting to see who ends up with that two seed and if anybody can really challenge the Cavs for that number one seed. Obviously, the Cavs are the better team than everybody else in the East. But like you mentioned before, LeBron doesn't mind coasting sometimes in the regular season just because they want to stay healthy when it matters.
Yeah, two games behind are the Bulls of the Cavaliers now, but we're only 18 in, so I wouldn't really
still a lot of time left.
I wouldn't pay much attention to those standings yet, but it will definitely be interesting. I think the Bulls are set up better to take the Cavs further, just like I thought Wade's Heat team, if they were able to get by Toronto last year, might have challenged Cleveland in a different way with Whiteside. Now, I think you have to be physical with Cleveland. I don't know if Toronto, though, you could tell me they're 4 or 5 a little better than I can with Valanciunas, but I'll ask you this. Can Toronto's front court provide enough, what we just talked about, the toughness in Chicago? We know what they could do backcourt-wise. We know what Lowry and DeRozan bring to the table, but is the front court of Toronto done enough this year to show you that this could be a team that could take Cleveland to 7 and maybe beyond that and defeat them?
I mean, I don't think their front court really is competes with the Cavs just because, you know, Tristan Thompson's obviously dominating inside. He's a ton of rebounds, a ton of hustle inside. Valanciunas kind of matches that up, but at that 4 spot, they kind of have a revolving door. Obviously, they have Patrick Patterson, and the rookie that they're starting this year at the four. But Kevin Love has been playing really well, and we actually just had an article on OTG. If Love, you know, is able to stay relaxed and play his game, you know, he had that huge quarter this year, 34 points in the first. Like, it gives them such another element and another way to attack teams and another player that the other team has to prepare for. So I think Kevin Love can really be that X factor, especially with the front courts around the East.
Yeah, that's a good win for Chicago yesterday. But all in all, there's just, in my eyes, there's just no reason to be upset or panic as a Cavs fan. You're in a very unique spot. Michael was, and just making the comparison, because I'm not to bring up the huge debate that everyone wants to talk about, but when you have a guy like LeBron on your team, like, is there ever a doubt that you're going to be in a great position to go deep into the playoffs, bearing a bad injury? I think the different thing about Jordan was that Jordan 82 times a year was like, I want to cut your throat. I want to rip your heart out. LeBron is okay, it seems, at this point of his career. And early in his career, it was maybe a little different, but at this point in his career, he seems like he's okay with, I'm going to sit 12 times, 15 times a year. There are going to be some nights we don't have it. We'll be a 55-60 win team, probably more towards the mid-50s, it's looking like here, and beat us in the postseason four times. And it's almost like he says, I bet you can't. I'll see you in the finals, and we'll match up there. It's such a cycle at this point. When he was with those Cavs teams early in his career and they were winning 65-70 games, well, not 70, but I think 66 was the highest, they didn't make the finals. He made the finals once in Cleveland before he left in 07. Then he came back with Miami, obviously. And those Miami teams, you look at it, did Miami win 60 once, maybe, that team, those teams?
I think, yeah, they might have won it once that the year they had that, like, 27-game win streak.
Yeah, but they weren't higher than 65.
Yeah, I mean, no, yeah, LeBron understands that. He understands that the seating, I mean, necessarily, long as they have somewhat of home court, it doesn't really matter because, like you said, yeah, no one's going to really beat him in four games, and he kind of understands that at this point.
Yeah, and you know what? When he was younger, and Doc Rivers spoke on the transformation of LeBron from going from the kid that was just playing to the, you know, how smart he became and, you know, dissecting plays and whatnot. But the evolution of LeBron also came when he was winning 65 games with much lesser talent than he started winning 55 games with. So he's kind of broken down the regular season to that way he wants it and is dictated to the way that he wants it. And, you know, that's just how it's going to be. So regular season losses, unless guys go down or, you know, it's effort stuff. You remember when they got smacked in Golden State last year by like, no, at home. At home, they lost by about 25-30 to go. And that was, I think, around the time that – was that during the Blatt firing? I think that may have been after that, but – right around that time, and Blatt, when, you know, you've seen some strange regular season things happen with Cleveland, but there's no way you could, after three losses, think that, you know, any lesser of this team.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just so early. Another team in the East, a team that may be starting to get some momentum, is the Bucks. Their coach Jason Kidd came out and said he thinks Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak, is one of the rare players in this league, and he mentioned him in the names of Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and LeBron James. Do you think Kidd is on the right track with Giannis, or do you think he's just kind of overhyping him?
I think he's trying to give him a vote of confidence here, and he's trying to instill, you know, some, you know, his confidence, and also just trying to, you know, hype his young guy up and think that, I would say, think he's better than he is, but I think with the Greek freak, he's athletically unique as anybody we've ever seen to be like that size and that, you know, the Anthony Davis type frame and be able to go up and down the floor and handle it and shoot it. But skill wise, he's not in the same conversation as those guys. So to make the comparison athletically, I could see it, but to become that next level, first he'd become an all-star, which will probably, in your opinion, would probably happen this year.
Yeah, I think he's on a track to become an all-star this year. Just his impact on the game is so high. And like you said, he's a rare player. We've never really seen anybody like him. That length is ridiculous. At times, it looks like you stopped him in the paint and he just reaches that arm out and drops the ball in. And his strides are kind of ridiculous to defend. He's getting to the point, though, where his impact is starting to really help his teammates. You know, teams
wacky waving, arm inflatable, and flailing tube man. That's the guy in front of the cart stuff.
Yeah, no, that's a good comparison. When he's going into the paint, you don't know where he's going. He's all over the place. Next thing you know, you got three defenders trying to stop him, and he's setting up one of his guys for an open three. So, I mean, I like Giannis. I think he's a great player. He's going to probably, you know, get into the upper echelon of the league of players, but I don't think he'll ever be in the Jordan, LeBron, Kobe type of player.
I just don't think he could score it from all areas yet. His jumper definitely needs work. You know, you could make the excuse of his length, but that hasn't stopped guys like Kevin Durant, and Davis probably has a more well-oiled and defined jump shot than the Greek Freak does. The Greek Freak will impact the game in any possible way he can. He hustles. And from what Jason James will say is that, you know, he'll get in there. Nobody will beat him to the facility. So you hear all the right things, and he's developed the right way. But when you want to mention him in that kind of company, you have to realize how much work he still has left to do and how much his skill has to catch up with the body. But athletically unique, absolutely, as impressive as you'll see in the league, but still a long way to go to be mentioned in the breadth of the legends of this game.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing he does have going for him, he is 21 years old, so plenty of time to improve his game. I mean, absolutely. When he gets that jump shot, though, on offense, it's going to be a pretty tough defend. There's not many guys that can match up with him.
Would you rather have him or Davis going forward?
I would rather have Davis.
Yeah. With Davis with the injury concern.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a difference, but I think Davis is just – he already has a better understanding of, like, you know, his impact. And, like, we've seen some games from him where it's almost like routine – I hate to use like fantasy points as like a stat line thing, but like he's putting up like 60 fantasy points a night, and an 80 fantasy point night isn't even surprising from him anymore.
Well, yesterday it was amazing. Yesterday I actually won with the Rondo pick and the Gortat pick, and I had Davis on my team. So when you shell out 11,700, and you only get 37 from Davis last night, and you still win. That speaks volumes to those lesser guys. So shout out to Orsel Morsin Gortat, who had a big night in San Antonio, but the Spurs still got the win.
Yeah, Spurs got the win last night. They're quietly starting to get some nice rhythm. They did have that loss against Orlando, but I think they've won 9 of their last 10. And Kawhi, I saw some emotion from Kawhi last night in the game.
You did not.
Yeah, I did. He didn't like a call, and he flailed his arms a little bit, and I was like, what? And then he, you know, later on in the game, he hit the game-winning jumper. So maybe that emotion starting to come out of him a little bit.
Well, I mean, after we spent about 10 minutes on the Greg Popovich comment about, you know, shimmy, I don't think you'll see Kawhi Leonard shimmy shake anytime soon, which would set a very interesting sight to see. But, yeah, I mean, Kawhi is one of those guys where he's a quiet assassin. He goes about his business. He's all basketball all the time from what his teammates will tell you. He's not much of a party goer and whatnot. But you got to respect the effort he puts in on both ends. And so once in a while, if he wants to get upset, Mike Breen used to say this all the time about Pablo Prigioni. When you know a call is wrong is when Prigioni would argue it, because the guy just never really says anything. And he just goes about his business. So I think when Kawhi is one of those guys that doesn't argue that much, doesn't cause the refs much issue, if he is one of the – because, you know, guys like LeBron and even Curry's adapted it now. Kobe used to do it all the time. It seems like Melo, and every play they're looking at the ref, almost every play. So yeah. When Leonard does it – yeah, when Leonard does it, I think you know he has legitimate beef.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, you have the guys like some of the Clippers players that are complaining.
Oh, they're the worst. Yeah, they're the worst.
Doc Rivers, and, you know, it doesn't really mean much to the ref. But if a guy who doesn't complain really at all says something to him about a call, you can tell that they're more likely to kind of be like, all right, maybe I messed up on that one. Or, you know, some of the reactions sometimes, like they are genuinely surprised.
And it just also trickles down to the youth. I mean, the NBA is obviously a great moneymaker and revenue in this country, and it's lucrative for owners and all that and players. But when younger players are watching, you just, because I'm dealing with youth basketball a lot, you just see some of the expressions are like, these guys actually think they're those guys. And the expression and the complaints and the negativity towards the referees, I know like Charles Barkley would point out that these NBA players should not be role models for younger players, but the reality is all the eyeballs are on them, and then the complaining trickles down to the lower levels. So I'd like to see a little bit more professionalism. I understand that these guys are extremely competitive and this is what they do for a living, but now that you touched on the Leonard thing, it just brings up a point that is a, that is an issue to me in the league, and that is the over complaining and the negativity towards the officials.
Yeah, I mean, it's at points it seems like they literally want every single call. Like they don't think that they foul at all. The worst is when you see somebody like shove someone and they're like, "Yo, ref, what did I do?" Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like
you well, there are some guys that never thought they committed. I mean, Rasheed Wallace was one of those guys, and then some guys will like raise their hand, like I did it.
Yeah,
I committed a crime. You know, you caught me red-handed. But some guys act like the refs, like they don't have replay, or no one saw it, or no one was watching, and they got away with it. Like it's or, this is their job to watch you,
or they act like they're gonna go back and change the call. Like they're not gonna be like, all right, oh no, you didn't foul. Never mind, go back to the other end. Like that's not gonna happen. So. I mean, it's good to maybe put your two cents in if they get something wrong, but to complain every play, like, calm down.
Speaking of dilemmas, because usually I have a song of the day, or I'm listening to something, so the dilemma came up on Nelly. I don't know if you ever heard that song. And then I was thinking of my own dilemma on whether I should block Muhammad on Twitter or not. it's my one shout out that I make per. Episode because we like to have some back and forth on Twitter, but I love you, Muhammad. I love the Grizzlies, and I've just been messing with this whole time. I hope that Connolly comes back as soon as possible and everything is cured in Grizzly land.
Yeah, that's tough for the Grizz. You know, they just racking up the injuries. Yeah. It sucks for them. And obviously, like, I hate to say like, oh, I told you so, but that Parsons contract, you know, with him missing so many games is going to be tough unless that guy can get healthy.
Yeah, but Muhammad, please stay out of my mentions. It doesn't need to happen anymore. I don't want to see you guys go further and further in the hole by you coming at me. It seems that every time he does it, and I'm going to continue to mention it until he eventually stops.
Yeah, you don't want that bad karma for the Grizz. They don't need it anymore.
Don't do it. It's not worth it.
So, Harris, you know, we were talking about a lot of playoff teams today. Out of the non-playoff teams, you know, teams that are not likely to make the playoffs, who's your favorite team to watch?
Non-playoff teams. Interesting. I in the East, it's tough to say. I think in the West, I've taken a liking to the Pelicans just because I'm obviously a big Anthony Davis supporter, and I like what Frazier's done in his lesser role. There's not a ton out there right now. The Lakers are on the outside looking in the playoff picture, right?
Yeah, they are currently
6-8. So I think you could point to the Lakers and the Pelicans in the West. East-wise, I mean, the Pacers are on a terrible watch. Think they're also on the outside looking in, or they might actually be in the eighth spot. No, they're on the outside looking in too. And Atlanta's falling back and lost five in a row.
Yeah, and Atlanta's looking to have a rough stretch after we showed them some love. For me, I like watching the T-Wolves. I like watching Andrew Wiggins, Karl Anthony Towns. You know, obviously the chemistry's not there. They're not like a full-oiled machine yet, but you can see all the potential. Also, like you said, the Lakers are pretty fun to watch and everyone's healthy. Obviously, my favorite non-playoff team to watch is the Nets, but for the purpose of this, I'll pick other teams. In the East, though, like you said, there's not really many non-playoff teams that are that great to watch. I mean, the Hawks are pretty good, but I think they'll probably get back in the top eight eventually.
Well, the Knicks have now made their way above 500 and find themselves in the seventh slot.
Yeah. Kristaps Porzingis, that guy is really coming to play. I mean, they're starting to just get a lot better chemistry and rhythm. On offense and defense, I think you're seeing some more effort. Obviously, they have back-to-back wins against the T-Wolves. Not a great team, but any type of, you know, moving forward, putting wins together is helping the team, helping build confidence. Also, I've liked what I've seen from Derrick Rose. You know, he's been pretty good in the fourth quarter. He's hit some tough shots that really help give him the win. The one thing I'll say about the wins against the T-Wolves, though, they did almost blow leads in both of those games, so got to work on closing out.
Yeah, their fourth quarter, I was speaking to my friend about this yesterday. Everyone knows I've been critical of the Knicks, and there's obviously some history there, and it seems like I'm treating them almost like an ex-girlfriend. So obviously there's some love there still, and I'd like to see them play well, but I'm obviously critical of some of the things that have happened in the organization, especially things that I've seen down the stretch this year. They could easily be 13-6, so there have been some struggles in the fourth quarter. They were up 17 the other night in Minnesota, and Melo bailed them out. And he also ended my chance of winning big money in fantasy. Thank you, Carmelo. And then a couple nights later, like last night with the game, and you talk about, I didn't see much of this, but similar situation with Minnesota. This is a team that has potential, and I picked them to be a 6-seed in the Eastern Conference. Could they potentially go a little higher? There's potential. There's obviously some things holding him back as well. But I said the Porzingis development and how he handles the workload of his second season is going to be a storyline to watch throughout the course. And also with Derrick Rose and his health, and Rose, like you said, has settled in and done a nice job. I think he's been maybe even a little better than expected. I think he's exceeded expectations a little bit. I think that's fair to say. 8-3 at home is a great sign. Playoff teams win basketball games at home. I think the Knicks are a force, but when I say force, I don't mean force to be reckoned with quite yet, but I think there are some positive signs. If closing out games is better than not closing out games, but they have to obviously close them out at a better clip against the better quality teams they'll see.
Yeah, I mean, that's the next step for this team. I also give a shout-out to their bench players, you know, Kaminskis, Hermann Gomez, Kylo Quinn, yeah. Brandon Jennings, some of these guys.
Quinn, you know, Kylo Quinn from Norfolk State.
Yeah, they caught a lot of hate early in the year. I mean, it was kind of deserved, but they definitely stepped up as a bench unit. They're starting to find some chemistry and starting to give the team a little bit of extra energy.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, this is, like you said, this is a group that definitely has potential if playing the right way. I think some of the pieces are there. We were concerned about their bench, but I think Kaminskis needs a shout-out. He's done a little bit more, and no one even knew about him at the beginning of the year. So he's definitely been better and has helped them off the bench and given them some energy and given them a spark.
Yeah, for sure. Because, like you said, that bench was not getting much love at all. We hated on them a little bit. Obviously, there's still plenty of season. So, but talking about New York, the other team in New York, the Nets, they signed Dante Mateunis to an offer sheet yesterday. Or last night, 4 years, $37 million. I think the Rockets have until Monday night around like 11 p.m. to match this offer. What do you think about this move?
He's all right. He's not one of my favorite players, but last time I watched him play, he spread the floor a little bit, catch and shoot three, not athletic European, but can move a little bit, not an awful liability defensively. But I think maybe like a Bojanovic type, a little maybe better or worse on certain nights, but nothing like to write home about, nothing crazy special, but could help them stretch the floor and give them a little bit of an offensive boost.
Yeah, I think he's a talented 7-footer. Like you said, he could shoot the three. He has a little bit of post moves. I mean, he's adding another piece of this team that, you know, in the right direction. I'm not saying he's going to make them a championship or anything, but obviously you need to fill out spots on your roster and you need to have good players. And I think at under $10 million a year, I think that's a solid move. Obviously, we don't know if the Rockets are going to match. It'll be interesting to see. I think the Nets can really use him, but the Rockets, you know, they might be like, all right, well, you know, we could use another man in our front court, kind of give us some insurance. The contract is set up, though, so the first 2 years are guaranteed, and then there's trigger dates where you have to guarantee the contract for the next year at a certain point in time in the earlier in the
season. Yeah, and I think something that gets overlooked a lot is, do you have some of those players on your roster already that could help him make his transition easier? As far as, you know, what I mean by that is the European, and the Nets do have some of those players
and
in place.
He was good friends with Jeremy Lin when Lin was in Houston. So okay, that's another plus for him. And like you said, if you have the international players, it kind of helps set the vibe. I think
I think Stola is from he's a Argentinian, I think.
Say that again?
Scola is from Argentina.
Yep, he is.
And Bojanovic is Lithuanian?
Croatian.
Croatian. So, and Montinez, you know what he is?
He's Lithuanian. I think the Nets have a Lithuanian player in their D-League team. Okay. So that kind of helps a little bit too.
Right. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I think, I don't think the transition would be a problem. I would really like the signing. I hope the Rockets don't match. I would like to just see some more talent. And if he can keep his back healthy, he's a nice piece to have on the team.
Let me ask you this question. Most likely to win 70 out of the Warriors, Spurs, Clippers, least likely to win 70 out of the Warriors, Spurs, Clippers.
I mean, I think it's the Warriors that are still the most likely because they're the most talented team. And we've said this before, even though they lost to the Rockets, they can still kind of get wins even when they're not even at full cylinder.
Right.
Even against the best teams in the league, they can still get wins against teams when they're not going full out. I think it's tough to say which one's least likely. I guess I'll go.
The Clippers are not going to win 70.
Yeah, the Clippers aren't going to win 70. I don't think the Spurs would either, just because
I don't think anybody might win. I don't think anybody's going to do it this year.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's likely, but I'm saying I don't see any situation where the Spurs would win it just because they don't have really that type of interest. And the Clippers have enough issues where they can't worry about winning 70. They need to make sure their team's ready for the playoffs. And they already rested a guy the last week, Blake Griffin. So I could see them resting players down the stretch.
First, I know it's only 20 games in, but I look at this Houston, Oklahoma City. Man, that'd be a fun first round matchup.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see that. I don't know if you got to catch the Warriors in Houston game the other night, but that would be a fun series.
Yeah, that could be a second round matchup. Yeah. the way the Rockets are playing right now. Speak on the Rockets a little bit, and D'Antoni and how that's gelled and Harden, and we knew their offensive numbers and the inflation was going to be up, but this is a team that's surprised a little bit, right? Surprised some people so far.
I think they're doing better than people would originally have thought. Harden's been a monster. You know, he just looks so fluid in playing point guard. He makes it look so easy to set up a teammate. Like, he just drops a pass in like no big deal. He's just dropping like 30, 10, and 10 games just like that. Ryan Anderson's had some nice minutes for them too. Eric Gordon, Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell giving them some nice play off the bench. So, I mean, I think the players are fitting in D'Antoni's system, and it's just all working out. I could really see this team have a real offensive firepower, and they'll probably advance at least to the second round in the playoffs, it seems like, if they keep this type of play up.
I think so too, but man, it'd be hard to take a pick against Russ in that first round. I think it's just so early to say where they would go into the playoffs, and we have to see things kind of – I know I like what Ariza and Anderson have done also as some role guys over there.
Ariza's really one of the most underrated players in the league, I feel like. I love Trevor Ariza. He always does his job. It seems like he gives you that defense. He shoots a three ball. He does a little bit of stuff here and there. So, I mean, I've always felt like he's been pretty good on every team he's been on.
Why is Charles Barkley so – and I want to ask you this question. I saw it on Inside the NBA the other night. And it seems like a lot of former players feel this way. Are they angry that the game has moved in this direction of jump shooting teams and spreading the floor and stretch fours? Or are they more upset of all the press that the Warriors have gotten, already winning a title, almost winning one last year and starting out 16-3 this year, adding Durant? This has become the Miami Heat, that vilified team. Why is it so hard for him to come around on their style of play and saying that they will not win this year? He doesn't believe in them. He thinks they'll fizzle out. He wants to take away from their title run and saying that the Cavs were injured. Meanwhile, the Warriors were banged up last year also. Do you think it's more of the old school guys that don't want to come around on this team because of the amount of press they've gotten, the style they play, and they said, if you give me these boys back in the 90s, we'd rough them up, and a ringless Barkley saying this nonetheless?
I mean, I think Barkley kind of is one of those guys that just doesn't like things or doesn't like people. I think he doesn't like the Warriors. He doesn't like what they do. Yeah. I mean, part of it is the shooting. You know, they like that hard-nosed basketball they played in. But the matter of the fact is, I say this, you know, the players nowadays are more athletic, they're bigger, they're longer than they were then. It's a lot harder to drive in the paint. Like, they might act like, oh, we're so tough. But, like, you know, when you have players like Giannis whose arm are going from, like, one elbow to the other elbow, or guys like Anthony Davis, like, getting to that paint, getting your shot over another guy like Hassan Whiteside, it's not easy. You know, these guys are super athletic. So sometimes pulling up for a jumper or shooting the three ball if you're open makes more sense than driving to a crowded lane.
I think the style of play has changed for a couple reasons. I mean, we know about the rule changes, and we know I think they want to keep guys healthier. I think they want to make the game a little bit more enjoyable for fans. I think it's more revenue has come in, and the league and sport has gotten more popular. I think in the 90s, the only way to stop certain guys was to get physical with them, and now we see the game has moved into a different direction with how physical you can be with somebody. I think that there's still a physicality to this league, and there's still an aggressiveness to this league. But I think if you look at it, you want to talk about guys that are tough. Like, if you put Steph Curry in a time machine, I really believe that he'll adjust. If you put Anthony Davis in a time machine, he'll have to adjust. These guys are great basketball players, and I'm actually tired of people taking things away from them because of their body type or what the league style is now, and it's a different this and different that. It sounds like guys are just bitter. It's overplayed. It's bitter. We can't appreciate the sport for what it is now. I could still appreciate it, but in the 90s, to me, physically assaulting Michael Jordan to the point where he couldn't walk is not basketball to me. It's a different sport. I don't mind the physicality, but they've certainly adjusted the league. For better or worse, it is what it is now, and I think certain guys aren't okay with it.
Yeah, then I agree with you. I think the players would be fine back in the day. I mean, You put them with a good coach, you get some enforcers on your team that kind of protect them if they're not as physical as some of the other guys, and you're fine. You're good to go. You know, you're going to find a way to make a player like Steph Curry or Anthony Davis successful in your system.
Yeah.
So I think it's just it's just a lot of saltiness and a lot of hate on the older players. Like, you know, just let them live. I'm sure that the other older players are talking trash about you when you guys are playing like blah blah blah. Yeah. So like. Come on,
but then if you go back into the league into the 60s, nobody was making some of the moves that you see now. It's a continuously evolving sport.
Exactly.
It just got to a point where it looked like football. With the 90s Knicks and the Heat and how physical that got, and that to me, that's taking away from the skill and the beauty of the game. I like physicality, but I also love to see the highest level of skill win and level of talent win. Physicality and a Charles Oakley and Anthony Mason aren't even in the same conversation as a Carl Anthony Towns and an Anthony Davis. And for some reason, that is more respected because I want to punch somebody in the face when they come down the lane. That's not the sport. That's football. That's the, you know, you're in the wrong field of work.
Yeah, exactly. So I agree with you on that. Like, I'd rather see guys, you know, earn the win by their skill level, not by who's the stronger player, you know, who can lift heavier weights in the weight room. You know, you go enter a weightlifting competition, that's what you're into.
Well, Kevin Durant was what? Couldn't lift 185 at the combine. And, you know, he's pretty good at basketball, guys. So,
yeah,
I think there's a healthy medium. There's a mix. Charles Barkley can speak all he wants. The guy has been overweight at times in the league.
Yeah, I mean, Barkley, he's overweight. He was overweight in the league at points, and he's overweight now. And he just seems like I said before, he's kind of like the guy who, you know, he just doesn't like players, and he's just salty. All right, before we wrap this up, Harris, what game are you going to watch tonight? What game sticks out to you, you're going to enjoy the most?
Let me take a quick look here. I don't know. I think not the Bulls and Mavericks. There's not really a matchup of two like marquee teams. I think the only matchup I think of teams are 500 or better is the Hawks and Raptors. But the Hawks have been spiraling out of control with five straight losses, so I expect Toronto to be able to handle them. Lakers at Memphis could be interesting. I mean, that's a Laker team that's, you know, obviously we know a surprise. Some people lost the other night to the Pelicans, so they're coming back down to earth. But, you know, you obviously always want to see the Warriors play. Miami goes to Portland, but I think if there's one matchup that sticks out, it's probably the Hawks and Raptors. But it's not a night full of entertaining matchups.
Yeah, there's not a ton of great matchups. I'll probably watch the Nets game, but another game. I mean, the Heat and Portland game might be interesting just because Portland gives up a ton of points, and I mean the Heat need to win. The Suns and Warriors will probably be not too bad if the Warriors don't blow them out because the Suns tend to play them tough.
Is there a fantasy game that sticks out for you?
I was looking at them earlier today, and I mean, maybe like some of the Utah players against the Nuggets. It's tough because a lot of teams are on back-to-backs tonight, so you don't really know what's up with the rotation. You know who's going to get less minutes and whatnot. So
you want to probably stay away from Phoenix and Golden State. That could be a blowout. You know, probably the Heat in Portland will probably produce some nice stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just because it'll be – like Portland just gives up – I think they give up the most points in the league.
They love that. I mean, when they're at home, they'll be able to easily dictate their pace than vice versa. Denver, Utah is tough because you know how Utah wants to play. Yeah. But Boston, Philly, Atlanta, Toronto – it's tough. Brooklyn and Milwaukee usually good for some numbers. They played the other night.
I would probably say that's the best fantasy game, but you got to make sure you get on the all day one if you're playing that, not just a 7 o'clock start because they start at 5.
That one and the and I'd say the Portland one. I would probably look out for some Portland guards. I'd stay away from the Portland bigs because I'm always afraid of Whiteside. So I would say some Portland guards have a chance tonight.
What about Toronto and Atlanta? Do you think there's any? Because that could be a pretty competitive game. I mean, Atlanta's
always tough to understand because they don't really want to score 110. Toronto could put up some numbers, but then you take some chances on those guards and you never know.
Yeah, it's either – I mean, when you're going with Toronto, you're pretty either going like Lowry or DeRozan, and you're just hoping you pick the one that has the big night that night.
I think Chicago-Dallas could produce a lot too because Chicago's coming off the high of the back-to-back. I would look at both those rosters closely. I think that my two favorite games, if we're excluding – the Nets game at the 5, because if you don't want to play in the late one, if you start at the 7:30, I would take a look at Chicago, Dallas, and also Miami, Portland.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. But that wraps it up for this episode of the NBA Outlet. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Appreciate all the support. And Harris, great show as always.
Yeah, thank you, man. So we'll talk to you guys. And again, all the support, all the listens, all the tweets, all the mentions, all that stuff is extremely helpful and appreciated. So continue listening, guys, and we'll see you on Wednesday.